Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station, available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Wednesday, August 3rd, 2011. It is now about 5:01 p.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, I guess it's good afternoon, everyone. We usually broadcast at 7 o'clock on Wednesday. We have a special time broadcast at 5 today. Thank you for joining us. During our live broadcast, we do invite you to call toll-free 888-773-4496. That's 888-773-4496. If you're calling for a cell from a cell phone, it makes no difference. You can call one of the other numbers that's on the website. That's 646-652-4620. I only mentioned that so there's no confusion. I guess I just made it more confusing. Also, we welcome your comments, your questions, especially your criticisms, to our email comments at libertytalkradio.com. Please do so. I also encourage you to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, Sutton-Associates, that's Sutton-Associates.net. In his newsletters, Andy discusses economic issues and how they affect you. It's important, folks. You better get on there and learn something. Andy's wonderful. He's our guest the third Wednesday of every month, and he gives us an update as to what is going on and what we need to do to protect ourselves financially. Liberty Talk Radio now is available via iTunes and Twitter at Liberty Joe. At Liberty Joe. We cleaned up the website. We've had many questions, people calling in, being unable to access either the archives or the live show. Hopefully all that is behind us. It's really clean. We took a lot of stuff off, and it's easy to do right now. Lastly, I would also like to remind our listeners to subscribe to our reminder service by visiting our website and clicking on the subscribe icon. We are pleased this evening to have with us author Suzanne Meyer. She's the author of Becoming Human Again. This evening we'll have her on the program, not because we're going to talk politics, we're going to talk about freedom, but not from the outside, which is a political way of looking at it, but we're going to look at freedom from the inside. I think she's on the line now. Hold on, please. Susan, is that you? Susan? Okay, I guess it's not. Okay, well, we had someone on the line. I thought it was our guest. She has not called in yet. I hope we did not have a... we confirmed this earlier today. I will wait a little bit longer and see if we... we're going to have a program with Susan. But it's really interesting. We do speak, and we've spoken for 5 years now, folks. This is 5 years about freedom, all from the point of view that government is the one that's restricting our freedom. But what we don't do is we don't talk about freedom and how we ourselves as humans restrict ourselves from being free because of the way we think, our act, our behaviors, you know, our belief systems. And I think this is critical, and that's why I'm having Susan on the air this evening. We don't look at it that way. I think it's an interesting perspective. She hasn't called in yet. It is now almost 4 minutes after the hour, and I am getting concerned that somehow we lost her. Susan, if you are out there, just dial in. You can call in 646-652-4620 or our toll-free number, 888-773-4496. And just once you get the Blog Talk Radio, we're using the Blog Talk Radio platform for our incoming calls, and we also stream. But also then press the one button, and I'll know that it's you. That means you want to be on the air. You want to converse with me. And we'll wait a little bit longer. folks, it's very interesting as to what is happening in the world today. Look at what's – it seems like today, if you watch the news – and I wound up watching the news a good portion today because I had a major operation on my arm. And believe me, it has been very painful, and I'm quite frankly quite debilitated. I am trying to rest it as much as possible so I can heal. I'm going to be through something like a six-month period of rehabilitation. Of course, the braces come off and all, and the bandages come off, you know, in 4 weeks. But I'll be honest with you, I would think twice before I had this again. They told me it was going to be very, very painful. It was, they were right. They were being very truthful with me. But I said, oh, what the heck, I can do it. But it's probably a good thing that I had it done because it is my right hand, and I would have lost use of a portion of the of my right arm and hand, which would not have been good. Anyway, we do talk about freedom from the outside, typically, and freedom from the inside. And today was a good example. Here's freedom from the outside, and that is the European Union, which has always been a boondoggle to start off with. Never had any essence in reality whatsoever. Taking all these countries, joining in, and what's really interesting is all of these have been basically socialistic type countries where the government participates in about everything, just like the government is starting to participate in everything here in the United States. And so you have countries where the governments are participating in the economic process and have their own set of rules, their own set of economics. So you have these dozen or so, I think there's 11 Euro countries, and they all have their own rules under a common currency. Now, what's interesting is that every single one of these countries have always have been running high deficits. They've, some of them have devalued their currency, you know, within the past 50 years. That means they couldn't pay their debts, so they just printed more money and cut their debts in half or three quarters or whatever the case may be, similar to what they're talking about here in the United States. So, and they brought all these people together under a very, very, very strict mantra, guidelines. And what's interesting is that they spend, I heard some figures like $1 billion a year in administration of the euro. And you would think that these guys would know everything that's going on in every country to make certain that each country was in fact following the rules of as set forth in the agreement to join the European Union, right? And of course, the European Union is basically a common currency to facilitate trade. Well, everybody was keeping two sets of books, and those that were in trouble with the Eurozone knew they were in trouble, did nothing. Somehow they literally kicked the can down the road with their eyes open, knowing they were going to get kicked right in the pants right afterwards. And this is what's happening in what they call the pigs. That's Portugal, Italy, Ireland, Greece, and Spain. Now, the other countries are no pillars of strength, believe me. I mean, they're much stronger, but no pillars of strength. Remember, the United States currency is still the strongest. However, as the American Institute of Economic Research said about a year or two ago in one of the articles, the U.S. currency, the U.S. dollar, is the world's tallest dwarf. So we're not talking about something you would be proud of. So here we are, and all of this is coming to fruition. All of it's coming to fruition. The Eurozone is coming apart. The high debt rates of many of the third world countries, you know, can no longer be sustained. Economic activity is slowing down around the world. So those countries that were heavy in manufacturing, like China and Indonesia and Thailand and Vietnam, all of these emerging countries in manufacturing. And we're talking about not only in the high-tech manufacturing, in which they've been very, very good at, but also in the manufacturing of just general stuff. I mean, low-tech manufacturing. This is slowing down. Now, they've based so much of their currencies and their projections on the fact that they were going to continue growing. doesn't work that way. You know, it's like everything continues to get better. And it doesn't work that way, folks. You know, we always have to be judicious. Now, here's the trick. If you read a economics book in high school, a basic economics, you know, Dick and Jane 101, or an economics book in college, Eco 101, anyone who went to college probably took that class, you would find that all of the principles that we learned in those courses, you know, supply and demand, the issuance of currency, bada bing, bada bang, bada boom, are ignored. Every country ignores them. And somehow they all have their own twist. They all have their own set of rules. And I could never really understand that. I said, it's like saying the law of gravity no longer applies. Well, it does apply. No matter, you can say anything you want. The law, you can't negate the law of gravity. And what they did that to basic economics. And for some reason, everyone is enthralled or has been enthralled with the fact that government intervention is not only the cure, but the driver of economic activity. Think about that. The driver of economic activity. Now, in what book of economics did you ever learn not only in Economics 101, but in the more advanced classes, they're saying government is the driver of economic activity. Now, the only thing that government can do is government can make it easier for banks to borrow money by lowering the interest rate slightly so it becomes a little bit more attractive. But there's for any time you have one step in one direction or one action, there's always an equal reaction, equal and opposite reaction. Just like when you take medicine. Let me give you an example. My arm. My arm is killing me, right? I took some heavy-duty pain medications because, quite frankly, I literally could not stand the pain. And they said, the doctor said, please take the medication, none of this macho stuff. And I said, I can do it, He was right. I could not stand the pain, and I took the medicine. Now, it did help with the pain. I mean, the pain subsided substantially enough that it was easy to tolerate, right? And I said, wow, that's great. But that was no free lunch, folks. That was no free lunch whatsoever. You know why? Because all the other functions in my body didn't work very well, and I mean all of them. And so I suffered in another way. Now, it was a good trade-off because, quite frankly, I couldn't stand the pain, and it saw me over a rough spot. Now, governments can do that for a short period of time, but what governments have to realize is that for anything, any economic activity to progress, is you have to destroy that which, or not destroy yourself, but allow to be destroyed, that which is inefficient or not working. And what governments do is say, oh, no, we can't have that industry go down or close a plant or whatever. We have to go in there, they're too big to fail or too small to fail, whatever the case may be. They go in and they interrupt that process. And once they interrupt that process, what we do is we find that the government came in and saved jobs. No, they didn't. They just kicked the can down the road. Because you have to, it's destructive. The free market is very, very destructive. Constantly, on a day-to-day basis, certain things go by the wayside and should be pitched and thrown away for new stuff to come in that rejuvenates that particular activity, that particular industry, or whatever. And yet the government says, oh, we can't do that because politically, that means I'll lose votes. And they continually try to save everything. Well, people say, well, if the government doesn't stay involved now, what will happen is it'll be disastrous. We'll have a severe depression and companies will close and banks will go bankrupt, etc. And the answer is maybe yes. Oh, probably yes. But in that case, what we should be doing in that case is that we should allow it to happen and then build from that. Not help, not give money to one, you know, and sacrifice one company for another, not prejudice one company against the other, depending on who they are or their political affiliation. And that's what we've done. And we've done it so long that we can't unravel it now. And the only way we'll see our way to prosperity is if we allow things to fail. We have to allow things to fail. General Motors has to fail. You know, I heard a guy on TV, he was some muckety muck from General Motors, and he was so proud that the Chevy Volt, that's the quasi-electric car that you run on the battery for the first 40 miles, which you don't get 40 miles, only in the perfect circumstances, and then an engine takes over. So it's sort of a hybrid, you know, and you fool yourself into thinking that it's an electric car, but it cost $41,000. And they knew it was too much money. They, you know, it was a ridiculous car, too much money, too small, doesn't have no practical application whatsoever. So the government now gives you $7,500 to buy one. Well, just think of that. I mean, that means every time someone buys one of those cars, I have to help them pay for it. I have to help somebody else buy a car that's inefficient and shouldn't be in the marketplace, all because the government doesn't want to see General Motors fail. If we look at the worst depression we ever had in the 20th century, it was not the depression that started in 1929. It is the depression that started in 1920 to 21 for 18 months. And the government set back, reduced all of expenses by 50%, folks. Could you imagine a real 50%? Could you imagine if the government cut its expenses by 50% today? Well, the thing is, people didn't work for the government. There were very few people in government anyway, so, you know, that didn't hurt anything. But if we did that today and we cut the government by 50% overnight, just closed everything down that was not absolutely, absolutely essential, do you know the unemployment, what it would be? My God, we'd be up to 30, 35% unemployment. Because we'd be closing down the Department of Education, Department of Energy, both of which are worthless. You know, we would bring back our aircraft carriers, which all they do is cause problems and create terrorism, and bring our troops home. I mean, the amount of unemployment and the amount of factories that would go under would be phenomenal. But it's the only way for us to finally get to a point where we say, this is where we are. All right, we are down and out, we're bankrupt, everything's closed. Now let the market build it. Let's let you and me as people decide what we want and what we don't want and get the government out of it. But the government doesn't do that. They keep on imposing themselves. And as they keep on imposing themselves, they make the situation worse and worse and worse and worse. And the way they do that is they enact more and more legislation, which reduces and restricts our freedom. You know, the other day I was paying a tax for my business. I mean, I pay more stupid taxes, I'll be honest, that I do not understand. I have no idea what they are. I paid some sort of like operating business tax. The hell, an operating business tax? Of course I'm a business. If I'm a business, I'm an operation if I'm going. But I have to pay a tax because my business hasn't gone bankrupt. Now I have two businesses, my wife's audiology practice and my industrial health testing business. So I wound up paying these two stupid taxes. And I said, I don't want to pay the stupid tax. I mean, I didn't want to get this tax. I mean, what is it for? I don't know what it's for, and no one knows what it's for. Now, therein lies a real, real big problem. So then we get a personal business property tax. Now just think of it. Look how stupid this thing is. In Oklahoma, we used to have a property tax, a personal property tax, which was a horrible tax. Everyone hated it. And every year you got assessed based on, you know, the type of house you lived in and your personal belongings or whatever it was. I don't know how they did it. And then you paid the stupid tax every year. It was annoying. And you can get tax exemptions and all that. It was a big nightmare. Well, they decided, they voted it in, they said, nope, we're going to do away with it. So, yeah, everybody was happy. Yay, the politicians did away with the tax. No, 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 no. They didn't get rid of the tax. You know what they did? You know what they did? It was really wonderful. What they did is that they transferred from the individuals and put it on the corporations. So the corporations pay a personal business property tax. So they doubled that up on the businesses or whatever. So they didn't lose any money. Now, let me tell you how this works. If an individual buys a computer, this is an example, buys a computer, you know, you buy the computer, you pay sales tax or whatever for it, and you bring it home, and that's it. Every year, you don't pay a tax on the computer that's in your house. You know, it's paid for. But in business, if you are, in fact, the driver of industry and you are creating jobs, you get penalized for doing that. Because if you buy a computer that's needed, that an employee that you hired needs to do their job, you have to pay a tax every single year on that computer. After you pay the sales tax, et cetera, et cetera, then you pay the tax every single year that you own that computer. You get penalized for being productive, for creating jobs. You are penalized. So when these guys say that, you know, Barack Obama says, we need to, you know, help the create jobs. Government cannot create jobs. They can just destroy jobs. Because I'll be very honest with you. I would love to go out of business. I would love to shut everything down, absolutely everything down. And you know why? Because then I can say, ha-ha, good, shut it all down because I don't have to pay those stupid taxes. Let the government pay it. Let somebody else pay it. And that's what happens to small business owners. They get tired of paying these stupid taxes. They get picked to death. And then the government says, well, we're interested in improving jobs. You can't. You want to improve jobs? Get out of my way. Eliminate all of the stupid restrictions. Now, believe me, if you got rid of all restrictions, I'm not going to start beating my employees because there's no regulation. I mean, it's so stupid. If the government doesn't have all these regulations, you know, I'll come in the morning and I'll start whipping my employees, and it'll be the horror. You know, I'll just be an animal. It'll be like anarchy in the street, cars burning. No, nothing will change. I mean, I don't treat my employees the way I treat them because there's government regulation. I treat my employees well, and I treat my customers well. For one reason and one reason only, it's the right thing to do. Not because it gets me more productivity out of the employees, or not because it gives me return business by the customer, because it's the right thing to do, period. No other reason. But the government wants to regulate that. All right, here we go. We have someone on the line. Let's get him on the line right now. Caller, you're on the air. Your first name, where you're calling from. Caller, you're on the air. Okay, you can stay on the air. Don't go away. Just stay on the air. I'm sorry. You did not click the one button to ask me a question. I forgot that. I'm so anxious to see if we can still get our guest on the air. So if I did that, please stay on the air. Thank you very much. I hope you understand what I am saying. I hope you understand the thrust of that and the frustration, the absolute utter frustration that people have, you know, with government. And when the government says, oh, we're here to stimulate the economy, and, you know, the government has nothing to do with that. What does the government have to do with creating jobs? How do they, when they say, excuse me, how are you going to do that? Well, you're going to give somebody money and say, oh, here's a whole bunch of money, build a road? That's not creating jobs. I mean, look at war. This is the way they create jobs. It's through war. And this is the way they do it. They create a war. They start a war, which we've done it now in Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Afghanistan, you know, you name it, you know, Iraq, you know more. You know, and those that we're not sure of, Yemen, you know, and we got all these wars, small and big wars going. And not that they're attacking us, we got to keep the war going. Because if we don't keep the war going, we're finished. It's all over. But what we do, what's great about war is the health of the state. The reason for that is that we produce stuff, you know, bombs and planes and stuff like that. All that stuff gets destroyed in war, and so we produce more of it. Economy is going fine. But it doesn't make any sense. Well, why don't we just build a building and then just you know, implode it and have it fall. He said, boy, that was good for the economy. We built a building, never used it, but then we destroyed it. You know, it was good for the economy. It makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. In fact, everything that's going on today, absolutely everything makes absolutely no sense. All this thing about debt reduction, there is no debt reduction. There will be no. In fact, it will increase about the same, if not more, than it would have had they made no agreement at all on tax cuts. Absolutely none. And you know what? The world knows that, folks. The world really, truly knows that. And as a result, the markets are reacting accordingly. Those people who have their money in bonds and in regular stuff may get hurt tremendously. And what's really bothering, what's really of concern, is the fact that you have people whose our net worth as individuals has been drying up. It's been going down. It's our net worth per individual in the United States now is pitiful. Is pitiful compared to what it used to be. It was growing. And now it's not only because the price of the housing is down, it's because the price of everything up, everything else is. I went to a coin store to buy some silver coins for my employees, which I give every month. Everyone gets a $1 silver coin every single month. I tell you, it's getting costly. I started this when, you know, silver was, you know, $6. And so when I go in there, it hurts. But I say, it comes out of my own pocket, but I do it. I do it anyway. I say, better I give up something of mine and give it to them. They need it. They're the ones that are making ends meet. I'm retired now. I don't have to have the newest and the best of everything. I don't have to ride around in a Lincoln Continental. I can, you know what? I can ride around in my Subaru, my 1996 Subaru with 263,000 miles on it. It's fine. That does me just fine. So I continue to do that. But the couple of weeks ago when I went in, the place was jammed. Absolutely, absolutely jammed. I said, wow. I had to wait some time to just see the person behind the counter. And I looked, I finally got a little chair, you know, stool that's by the counter. I look on both ends, and everyone had like, except for one person, the guy was looking at some coins, they had like a little mountain of jewelry. And they went up and, you know, looked up and down. And when the guy came over, I said, none of my business, but I said, are all these people, are they buying that stuff or selling it? And he said, oh, no, they're all selling it. And what I inferred from that is that what people were doing is selling their net worth. And they weren't, I'm sure they weren't selling it because they were going to get a good price and then go out and invest it in something. I would bet dollars to donuts that people were doing that. And they were going to take that money to pay the rent, to buy food. In other words, people's net worth is continuing to be reduced, constantly being reduced. And I went in there, and you see, I bought coins. Not for myself, but for my employees. So what I'm trying to do is raise the net worth of my employees, not only pay them fairly, but give them something in return. Because most likely they're not going to go out and buy a coin. They're just not going to do it. People don't do that. Folks, let's stop for a second for station identification.
You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. Political talk derived from a historical perspective. Not always palatable, but good food for thought. Pure libertarian talk with host Joe Cristiano. LibertyTalkRadio.com.
Folks, this is Joe Cristiano. I'm your host for Liberty Talk Radio. We invite you to call 888-773-4496. That's 888-773-4496. Of course, your comments are always welcome to comments at libertytalkradio.com. That's comments at libertytalkradio.com. There's a caller on the air, 918, and it would exchange of 949. I will not put you on the air. Just please hold on there and listen on your phone. I'm sorry. I did that twice because I just assumed you might have been, you know, our guest and hoping you were, but obviously, and 918 is the Eastern Oklahoma area, and I don't think our guest is from Eastern Oklahoma. Anyway, one thing I wanted to do in the past couple of weeks, but I didn't have an opportunity, is if you recall, I had a broadcast called Bad Walmart, bad, you know, and saying that, you know, Walmart is not all that bad. And I was coming from an economic perspective, not from an employee relations perspective, but what Walmart really does bring to the economy and what it does for people. And I got a lot of mail criticizing me, saying, do you know that they engage in peasant insurance? And that means that they take out insurance on employees. And now this is not key man insurance, like, you know, the main person or whatever, but just on rank and file employees, cash registers, people and whatever, cashiers. And they take out sizable insurance. I'm talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars of insurance on these people. And this is from what I read. And then when the employee passes away, they collect the money tax-free, right? Well, but they don't advise the employees, apparently. And I wanted to know what the scoop was from them. Now, once the employee terminates their employment, they keep that insurance, and people keep track of all these people. They pay the premiums every month, and then they get all these healthy checks, all tax-free. Well, this is without the employee consent. Now, you know darn well that Walmart is getting an excellent, excellent rate, you know, if they're taking out insurance, because most of the people are very young. You know, so their rates are low, and you know, because they buy a million policies, that their rate is negligible. So what they collect over what they put out has got to be just phenomenal. But they're going to win, because everyone, unfortunately, is going to pass away someday, and they're going to collect big bucks. So I wrote them a letter. I was chastised for that. I said, you know, you're right. I didn't know that. I had no idea. Let me read the letter to you that I wrote to Walmart. I said, Walmart Home Office at 702 Southwest 8th Street, Bentonville, Arkansas, 727-16-8611. Attention, customer relations. This is on Liberty Talk Radio letterhead. As a recent live broadcast in which I was defending Walmart's position in the marketplace, solicited several responses centered on Walmart's policy of dead peasant insurance, quote-unquote. Several websites seem to confirm this practice, that is, taking life insurance policies out on rank-and-file employees, but apparently without their knowledge or consent. I also understand that these insurance policies allegedly stay in effect after employment is terminated. Mentioned was the fact that although this practice appears immoral, it is not illegal, and is practiced by an old, untold number of corporations, Walt Disney apparently being one. I promised my listeners that I would contact you for a better understanding of whether or why this policy is in effect. Sincerely, Joe Cristiano, talk show host, Liberty Talk Radio. Now, by the way, this dated July 1st. Now, here we are, August 3rd. Over a month later, and I have not received a response. Now I'm angry. Now I'm really angry. And, you know, my broadcast, shamefully, but I mean, I'm not going to take it back because what I said was correct, was defending Walmart. And they could have at least given me the courtesy of some sort of reply. When in business, whenever I have a business transaction or a someone that I transact business with, and they are unresponsive, it drives me nuts. I mean, absolutely drives me. I mean, that's the worst thing that you can do in business, folks, is not respond. Now, if they respond and I don't like the answer, that's one thing. That's the way it goes. That's the way the cookie crumbles. You're not going to like every answer, but at least if they respectfully respond and give you an honest response, that's fine. I mean, you have to be grown enough to live with that. Walmart refused to do so. Now, folks, I do want someone to call in and ask me a question. I am ranting now because our guest did not show, and I'm very disappointed. Please call in toll-free 888-773-4496. That's 888-773-4496. Call in with any question at all. I mean, you name it. I don't care what it is. Just call in. We don't have to stay on any particular subject. We'll make this open mic night, okay? Of course, our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Email me anytime. I respond to every email. Now, if you're calling on a cell phone or on the computer, just dial in and press the one button, and I'll know you want to ask a question. And ask me a question, even disagree with me. That's fine. Anything, because I did not plan to do a broadcast this evening, and it's very difficult for me to conjure up an entire hourly broadcast without any questions to go by. I'm just trying to catch up on all the other things that I've been doing. Next week, we do have James Rhodes. We've had him before, and he'll be our guest next Wednesday. But after that, I think I'm going to go back to my Thursday morning broadcast and rant for a half hour. One thing I love to do, but I love to have some sort of direction, and I like to have something in mind saying, aha, this is what I heard today, and bingo, go on with it. I thought what was really interesting, let me rant a little bit more and just change the subject altogether. I was listening to one of the news broadcasts while my arm was healing, I guess, and it was one of the defense gurus, the Secretary of Defense or whatever, and he had this chart, and he showed all of the reductions that the military has made, and he made the point that he says, we have cut ourselves to the bone, we can't do any more. Now, you know, I'm looking at it, and I said, now, how could that be? But when you look at the chart, he was talking about, like, the number of ships. Well, we're not building ships. That's one thing that's not being done because we don't need ships. We are building aircraft carriers. He didn't have aircraft carriers, but he had ships. And he had, like, 753 ships 20 years ago, and now we have, you know, 350 or something like that, which is still a phenomenal number of ships, by the way, you know. And we have ships. What for? Think about it. Why do we have any ships at all? If we have a Department of Defense, what do you need ships for? Where are you going? Oh, in case someone gets bad, we can go over there and, you know, and knock their lights out. Well, that's what we've been doing. We've been using our ships as an offensive weapon. So my question is, why do we need any ships? Zero would be fine with me. I mean, is someone going to attack us by sea? And we're going to sit there and go, oh, boy, look at all those ships coming. Wow. Well, Clyde, what are we going to do? I don't know. Maybe we'll run for the hill. No, of course not. They can't do that. I mean, we have submarines. Now, he didn't have number of submarines. He had ICBMs, I think was another category. Well, you know, we've been reducing our ICBMs because we had like 50 quadrillion of them, and then we had a ridiculous number. You know, the number of nuclear warheads. Of course we reduced them. We had like 50,000 of them. So, I mean, and we still have a ridiculous number. But what was interesting is this is the lie. This is the lie that they give you when you listen to these bums. And they're all lying bums. Everyone, they're lying bums. Every single one of them. Is that he didn't say that the number of drone aircraft, that we had in 1990, which would have been about zero. I don't think we had drone aircraft in 1990, and the number we have today. And that, I don't know what that number is. That may have been zero, and now we have 1,000 or 10,000, you know. But you can take all of the modern warfare that we have that we didn't have in 1990 and compare that. But he didn't put anything on the list. He put only stuff that was basically, you know, Korean War, Vietnam War, World War II stuff on the list that we reduced. Very interesting. And he says, oh, we can't reduce anymore. Well, we spend over $1 trillion a year on the military. And what's really sad, truly, truly, truly sad, is that we do that, you know, under the guise that we want to support our troops. Now, you know what, folks? If you buy that, it makes no sense whatsoever. Absolutely zero sense. Zero. We commence to war with another country for reasons we don't understand. We go to Lebanon, or we go somewhere. We go to Yemen, or we go to Pakistan, or you know, and we go there and we send out troops there. Well, they didn't attack us. They didn't do anything to us. You know, we're there because we don't know why we're there. We just don't know. So then we go there and we need all sorts of equipment. That's 7,000 miles away. We need transporters and air tankers. And we need trillions of dollars worth, billions of dollars worth of equipment to maintain the troops there. And you say, well, we can't cut because we have to support our troops. What do you mean support? I mean, you know what? People say, you know, we know our troops are heroes. You know, our troops aren't too smart. I hate to say that, just not to. I mean, shouldn't our troops say, wait a minute. You want me to, you want to train me to fire this gun, this rocket, whatever, to go overseas to kill people that I have no affiliation with. I don't know who they are. And sometimes I have to kill people on a wholesale level by dropping a cluster bomb somewhere that will kill innocent women and children. And, you know, and that makes me a hero. I mean, just think of it. We put the troops, now I know the troops, I believe me, I feel sorry for them. But, you know, we're not thinking. You know, they go into the army because they actually have been indoctrinated that they're doing it to protect the freedom of the United States. They're not protecting our freedom. They're protecting, they're generating revenue for the money changers of the world. And not only necessarily the money changers for the United States, the big guys, the guys who tell the president what to do. I mean, they're not there to protect our freedom. And then, you know, I hear things like, what we should do is we have to be there in the Gulf, you know, to protect our access, to foreign oil. Well, I say, fine, that's fine. I understand that. And I said, now, we're there to protect our access to oil because we need the oil, right? They say, yeah. I said, all right. Now, what countries need our grains? Now, we're the breadbasket of the world. Which country need our grains to survive, for their people to survive? I don't know, they say. Well, I said, well, there are countries. They say, yeah, there are countries. Well, then wouldn't it stand, if that's the case, then wouldn't it stand to reason that those countries would send their troops over here to protect their access to our food supply? And when you say that, they go nuts. Absolutely, absolutely nuts. Okay, I think we have a question here. Caller, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Joe. This is Sally.
Hi, Sally. Nice.
I have a question.
Sure.
Why is it, since we do have such a huge military, why do we not conquer other countries anymore? For example, why don't we just take over Mexico, and that would solve a lot of problems? Why don't we do these things anymore?
Well, you know, that's it. And I know you're saying that tongue-in-cheek, that I'm assuming you don't believe
yeah.
we should go to other countries and just take over all of the other countries, go to Canada and take them over. I'm assuming you really don't mean that. Or do you mean that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Not really.
Okay.
But
I see.
And we have so many problems. We can't seem to actually win a war.
You know, you're absolutely correct. Well, first of all, they're not war, Sally. You go into that. That's
mm-hmm.
why we don't need a military, because if let's assume for a second we had no navy and all this other stuff, and you know we just had a militia, a state militias, yeah? And another country came here. How would they take us over? I mean, that means every one of us,
mm-hmm.
right, would become patriots, right? We'd all have our guns and whatever. And any soldier that would walk down any street would get a bullet in his head, right? I mean, it would be impossible for them literally to take over. I mean, they'd have to just destroy the whole place.
Right.
Destroy the whole place. what good would that do? So it's impractical. The only way that you can take over another country today is financially, you know, or the way we do it. And it's only a way to gain income. Now, but you're right. But we go 7,000 miles away where the war becomes very antiseptic. In that, I mean, that means it's 7,000 miles away. We don't get any news reels like we did in Vietnam. We don't get nothing. But we just hear the news that they want us to hear. And it's 7,000. We don't see it. So it's always good news for us. It's always the good things that we're doing over there. You know, that's all. The reason why we don't, if we were going to take over any country, and I mean this, you know, we should take over Mexico. I mean, Mexico is a pot. It is a problem. The government is really not running the place anymore. The gangs are running the place, and that's causing us problems. Not that we should take it over, but if we had to take over one country, you know, you're right. We should go to Mexico, and it would take us about 3 hours. I'll tell you, 3 hours.
Yeah.
Seems
like we could help them out and help ourselves at the same time.
Yeah. As immoral and as illegal as that would be, the Mexican people would welcome that. I mean, they truly, like we said in Iraq, where they would throw flowers at our soldiers and all that crap, you know, they really would be throwing flowers. They would want us to take over because right now they know there is no chance, there is no possibility of their lives being any better. But if Mexico can be run in the same manner or similar manner as the United States and the gangs can be controlled because we're going to have a strong military and police force and corruption will be hopefully, you know, eliminated, you know, whatever, be more like the United States, people would stand a chance of improving their station in life and they would welcome us. But the problem with that, it's too close to home.
Right.
It is too close to home, number one. And secondly, who is making money with these drug wars? The government makes money on the drug wars. I mean, I mean, whenever there is a conflict, government starts creating organizations and hires people and bada-bing, bada-bang, bada-bing. And there's money to be made. And this money only comes from the slaves of the republic, and that's you and me. I hate to tell you that. So, you know, the reason why I hate to tell you that. I mean, you're probably a very nice lady, but I'm just saying that you're a slave, just like me. And I'm not such a very nice person.
Yeah.
You know, so put it that way. But when we go overseas, when we go to these other countries, we're not going there because we feel their pain or anything like that. We go there because we're protecting access to minerals and resources and oil and whatever. It has nothing to do with the people whatsoever. All we want is we want obedience from the leaders of other countries so they will do what we tell them to do. So we have access to mineral rights, oil, etc. And also strategically and militarily, we can encircle both China and Russia and keep them at bay so they can never become any more powerful than they are now so we can continue our plunder of the world. Isn't that horrible?
Yes, yes. Yeah. Do you think we have gained any benefits since we've been in Iraq?
Oh, absolutely.
From that country?
No, we haven't gained.
They have oil. There was money when we took care of Hussein, and you know, I just wondered what did we get out of that?
Well,
what have we gotten out of that?
We got absolutely nothing, because if we did get something out of it, don't you think that would be headline every single day? I mean, let's assume we gained $1 million a day from it, of oil or whatever. Do you don't think that our elected official would say, well, because of our benevolent occupation of Iraq, we are now gaining 1 million barrels of oil a day from Iraq, and it's paying for the war, and it's helping our oil supply, you know, blah, blah. No. You don't hear anything. It's because we ain't getting squat from that country, and they're going to throw us out, and they should throw us out.
Yeah.
You know, it's a shame. Sally, nothing's working right. But wait, go on, please.
Oh, I'm trying to find some place in the world where it has worked.
Yeah.
I'm thinking.
Yeah. Well,
where have we done the best. When we finally got into World War II and got rid of Hitler, so to speak, that was great. And in fact, you wonder, why didn't we get in sooner? Look how many millions of people died.
Well, Sally, you're looking at it from a logical point of view. You have to look at it from an economic point of view. The American people did not want to go to war. And the government had to find a reason to go to war. We had merchant ships going across the Atlantic knowing that there were U-boats, submarines, German U-boats, and they were sinking these ships. Now, if you knew, if you were at the lake, I mean at the beach, and you know there were man-eating sharks in the water, would you go swimming there?
Absolutely not.
You're certainly not, right. I mean, you can go. I'm not going to follow you. But what we did is we sent all these merchant ships across, and most of them got sunk. But we were supplying aid to Britain. Now, there's nothing wrong with that, but we had an agreement with Germany at the time, with the Nazis, that we would not do that. So we were breaking our own rules. But let's get away from that altogether. Putting the ships across, they were sinking many of them. It still wasn't enough for the American public to be angered to get into the war. So what happened?
Right.
What happened? What occasion inflamed the American spirit to put us to war? Pearl Harbor. Right. And you really have to know history. If you know history, true history, not the comic book garbage, you'll understand that Pearl Harbor was not a surprise. It was a setup. And we allowed it to happen because we wanted it to happen, because the American public would not allow us to go to war like we did in World War I. Now, but beyond that, the question you always have to ask yourself is, why did we participate in any way that permitted in the uprise of the Third Reich? What did we do to assist that process along? Now, we're not going to get into that because that's a long conversation, but you'll learn when you really get down to the true nitty-gritty that had the Allied powers been fair and truthful to the German people after World War One, you know, there would have been absolutely no motivation for people to vote for someone like Hitler. People were starving there. People were given absolutely no food. They were given rations that weren't enough to eat. So when Hitler came in and said, "This is what I'll do to you," they'll say, "You're my man." So you have to say, did we participate in that? So we say, well, if we didn't go to World War II, Hitler would have taken over the world. Well, we allowed Hitler to go into war. They said, well, why would we do that? Because war is the health of the state. That's where the money is, Sally. That's where the money is.
Uh-huh.
There is no money in peace at all. Just think, if we were in total peace, all the aircraft carriers would come home, all the 12 boats that protect each aircraft carrier home. There's thousands, tens of thousands of sailors. Soldiers would come home. The thousands of airplanes that we make every year, they wouldn't be made, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All of the military-industrial complex would go bankrupt overnight. I mean, they would make no money overnight because there's no money in peace. And the United States would balance their budget. There'll be plenty of money for roads and schools and all the things that you and I need. But slaves don't get stuff.
Right.
You and I don't get stuff.
Right.
The military-industrial complex works it, earns it, and they earn it for the money changers. And I don't think, I'm not sure, I don't know you, Sally, but I don't think you're part of that group. I would suspect you're not.
No, you'd be right.
Okay. And in the interest of full disclosure, neither am I. Sally, stay on the line. I have somebody else here.
Okay.
Caller, you're on the air. I don't know what area code you're in because it's a cell phone. Do you have a question or a comment, please?
Well, I hope you don't mind my interrupting, Joe. I just found you. You're at the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I'll be going on. I had a guest, and I don't know where she was. We've been communicating back and forth for 2 months, and I don't know what happened, why she didn't show. But that's life in the big city. How have you been doing? I haven't heard from you in a long time.
Yeah, I haven't. I'm glad you're still on the air.
Left Block Talk Radio.
Do you have 5 minutes left or an hour and five? I don't know.
I'll be honest with you. I have, total minutes, I have four. I'll need one to get off the air. So I have a total of 3 minutes.
All right. Here's what I like to say. I'm co-hosting a regular show about Ron Paul.
Okay.
And
great.
You can come and visit us tonight at 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.
Okay.
If you'd like.
I would.
It's a Ron Paul Hour of Power.
All right. How do I get
And if you ever want to just drop on in to our show, because we have it like two or three times a week, you can always look up Ava, Indiana, A-V-A,
yeah.
Indiana, just like the state, in the search engine. And you can come on by, and you join the Ron Paul fans. And there's another show I haven't been to yet. That's about Ron Paul, but and then you and I can talk, and then you can talk with my host, and then we can talk about the debt ceiling and everything else.
Right. But I find you if I put Ava, Indiana, that's how I get to you guys tonight, right at 8 o'clock.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, I will try. I'm nursing a busted arm, and I'm in pain constantly, but I really will try to do that tonight.
Well, that's what happens when you go motorcycling.
Oh, God. It wasn't even that. I tripped in the garage over my own foot. Please, I don't want to get into that. I'm mad at myself, you know? But you get not only get old and fragile, you get old and stupid, you know, more stupid than anything else.
I hope you get better, Joe.
Okay.
All right? I hope to see you tonight or at any other time. Just look for us and drop on in.
Okay. Thanks a million for calling.
All right.
Okay. Thank you very much. Take care.
All right. Take care, Joe.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Let's see. That was nice of him to call. He used to be a regular caller on our show. Sally?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to hang up now with you because I'm going to close out the program. I want to thank you very much for calling Liberty Talk Radio. And if you'll email me to comments@libertytalkradio.com, your a mailing address and T-shirt size, I would love to send you a Liberty Talk Radio T-shirt, of course, but you'll be obligated to wear 24 hours a day.
Oh, of course.
Okay.
Well, thanks for taking my questions.
Right. Thank you so much, sweetheart. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
Okay. Well, folks, that's the end of today's program. It worked out to be okay. What do you know? We have one more call in the air, but they're just listening in. So I am going to go back to my bumper song. And, oh, by the way, I have to apologize. If you're listening via Blog Talk Radio, that bumper song sounds horrible, and we have to clean it up because it's a transition type thing. Here we go. Let's see if it works now. Yes, this is the end of tonight's broadcast. We'd like to thank Rant Shakers Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. Rant Shakers Audiology is a family hearing practice at 3227 East 31st Street in Tulsa. They may be reached at 918-749-7711. Call them for all your hearing needs. You'll be glad you did. Folks, you can further the cause of Liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you're either allowing the liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there is no middle ground. Folks, freedom is like riding a motorcycle. You feel free, liberated. Your life is in your own hands, but with that freedom comes responsibility and risk. The government is like training wheels. They control the ride and your every move. Ron Paul has a sign in his nest that says, "Don't steal, the government hates competition." With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.